Well, there are lots of diets to choose from these days. There's the 5-2 regime, the paleo diet, the Mediterranean, the CSIRO, the list goes on. But how about eating beetle larvae for 3 months straight? Well, volunteers in China have done just that, all in the interests of research for travel to deep space. And it turns out these beetles, or the larvae, are very high in protein and very low in fat. To tell us more, we're joined not by our usual science correspondent, Chris Smith. He's having a break. So ABC science journalist Wendy Zukerman is with us. And Wendy, welcome again to RN Breakfast.
Thanks for having me.
What a lovely thought as people are eating their Wheaties. Beetle larvae.
Well, I think you'll find people sort of used to squirm at the idea of sushi not that long ago. And I think it'll only be a matter of time before we start moving towards insects. But of course, these guys were doing it in order to test deep space travel. They were staying in a biosphere for around 3 months, trapped in a cage that was around 160 square meters with three people eating mealworms and some veggies and fruit on the side.
So eating the beetle larvae wasn't the worst of their circumstance.
Well, we don't know. They emerged last week smiling for the cameras. How their health is, we will wait and see. But the interesting thing is that it comes as, at the same time, NASA has also started an experiment to start growing red lettuce on the International Space Station. So we're really sort of gearing up for long-term space travel and trying to make that as comfortable for the astronauts and various volunteers as possible.
And this is on the basis that if you go far enough for long enough, you'll need to be self-sustaining.
That's right. It just costs too much and it's too impossible to start loading food. I think it costs between $10,000 and $100,000 every time NASA tries to load up the International Space Station with more and more food. So you really need to start self-sustaining if we're going to be heading to Mars and things like that. It just becomes impossible otherwise.
So this is an outer space version of the silkworm program that primary school children's, you give these astronauts a couple of beetles and you say, be good to the beetles because you need their larvae. Is that the idea? And you actually harvest.
That's right. They'd be harvesting.
Play a bit of Barry White and get them going with the larvae.
Yeah. Other scientists have suggested that perhaps mealworms aren't the best option because they are little escapees. So they could move around the vessel. And they've suggested perhaps using some kind of plant material that's quite proteinaceous. But at the same time, as we're doing all these experiments in space, there is a factory that just opened in the United States that's starting to breed crickets. So it's a real boon for the eating insects industry.
Now, for something for the parents of teenage girls to take note of, the research is in, apparently it's true, pregnancy is contagious. Is that what causes it?
That's right. I think there might be some other things along with it, but some research coming out of the Netherlands and Italy has used US data. They've tracked around 1,700 women for over 15 years, asked them questions about their pregnancy as well as their friends, and they've found that indeed your chances of getting pregnant increase if your friend is too, and that contagion rate lasts about 2 years and then it drops. So if you haven't caught the bug in 2 years of a friend from high school getting pregnant, you're probably safe.
And so what was it about that two-year period, or what was it about the social circumstance that meant that that happened?
Well, it's likely that you see, the 2 years is sort of what it takes to, you see a friend getting pregnant, you think, oh, okay, maybe I should be doing that. And then, of course, 9 months to actually have the baby. So it seems to be that sort of social circumstance gives you enough time to think about it. And I think the key to this research is it really shows kind of the power of the social circumstances in order to pressure people to have children. They compare themselves to their friends and they think, well, I guess if my friend's doing it, perhaps that's the norm and perhaps I should follow suit. So it'll be interesting to see with sort of the rise of a trend of sort of childlessness, whether that then carries on if your friends aren't having children.
It's interesting they've specified that there might be a couple of reasons for it. You've named a couple of them, but first, friends compare themselves to one another. Secondly, they're an important learning source for you. But I think the interesting third idea was that friends can share the childbearing experience and reduce the stresses associated with pregnancy. So there's some rationality in it there.
Yeah, the researcher came from Italy, and I wonder whether they do have a more communal way of raising children there, because I suppose that really didn't ring true to me. I'm not sure of any friends who have sort of given their children to even quite good friends to sort of babysit or share the load. It doesn't seem to be within our culture over here. So I didn't think that reason rang true. To me, it feels much more like the pressure, the social pressures, but also sort of on a more positive note, the idea, well, I guess if my friend can do it, perhaps it seems like a hard task, but I can do it too. Mm. But perhaps sharing the load, I suppose, from an evolutionary perspective, that sure makes sense.
And another finding, forget about DVDs, stream instead and save the planet. What's going on there?
Yeah, save the planet's a little bit. This study feels a bit like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, but at the same time, it does show that you can save an awful lot of CO2 emissions by streaming data instead of going to the DVD store and purchasing movies. What the researchers did is they did an entire systems-wide approach, so comparing the point at the data center, which is what sort of producing all of these movies, storing them, then sending it down the tunnel, the amount of energy it takes to do the transmission all the way up to the laptop or DVD or whatever it is that you're going to be watching your device on. Mm. And so they did the comparison for both streaming data and DVDs.
And so in the DVDs, you've got the actual production and carbon emissions and goodness knows what else in terms of producing the DVD and then delivering it to a store, renting it, taking it
exactly,
to your home,
all
bringing
the way
it
up
back
to the plastic sleeve that you'll need to put that DVD in. Now, they found that streaming was significantly better than, say, driving to the DVD store. And most of that energy came from, in fact, driving to the DVD store, the very sort of basic principle of doing that. So if you ordered your DVD online, then it started to even out. What was interesting, though, was that if you weren't driving to the store, say you were, ordering your DVD online, then most of the energy it was taking was actually on your DVD device. So rather than actually manufacturing the DVD itself, it was the DVD player that was sapping most of the energy in this system, which is sort of a curious notion. And I think this research could probably be extended to other ideas of what we're going to be doing online, such as clothes shopping, grocery shopping, and things like that. So the more that we can not move around and stay on our seats, although probably get up for a little bit and start doing things online, probably the better it is for the environment.
And I noticed that the researchers compared this to the modern day equivalent of the debate about which is more environmentally sound, the disposable or the cloth diaper, as they said, being Americans. But it actually also speaks to our changing consumption patterns. I want it, but I don't want to own it.
Yes, which I think is a very good thing that we're doing. I think it's a really sort of important move. We've seen so much wastage in our lifestyles that we just want to sort of throw out things and we don't really want to do that anymore, I think is the key. And so we're seeing a great benefit in using these sort of recyclable diapers in the form of streaming data.
Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Wendy Zuckerman, science journalist, and she's currently working with The Checkout on ABC One.